By way of capping off Radio Free America 36, the destabilization of the USSR in Eastern Europe, and once again I would remind listeners that one of the main points to understand as we take a look at what is going on, that the activities currently going on inside the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, both the possible breakup of the Soviet Union, although I doubt that the Soviet military and intelligence services will stand for that. They've already said, at least publicly, that they would not. Also the possible breakup of Yugoslavia, the possible partitioning of Czechoslovakia into Slovakia and the other elements of Czechoslovakia. But these things represent a fulfillment of Hitler's agenda and Hitler's actual policy inside that part of the world. And in a very real sense, the program that I'm doing, Radio Free America 36, could be termed How the USSR Lost the Second World War. And I mean that quite literally. I suspect ultimately that the destabilization of the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe will lead to a crackdown by the Soviet military and intelligence services. It's difficult to imagine that they would simply lay back and allow the Soviet Union to break up. And it is also difficult to imagine that they would allow the United States to gain complete military dominance. And so I would expect at some point, although perhaps I'm wrong, perhaps the Soviet Union will simply roll over and cease to exist. I would be surprised if that happened completely. But it figures that at some point there is going to be a return to the Cold War, because the Soviet military will crack down, whether they decide to depose Gorbachev or whatever they decide to do. I am not optimistic about the future. And it is my belief that the U.S. National Security Establishment and the Pentagon in particular would like to see exactly that. One of the things that's important about studying history and studying the real history of the United States is to understand that the military and intelligence services and what President Eisenhower referred to as the military-industrial complex, the very closely related defense industries in this country, that they basically call the shots, and I mean that quite literally. In studying the assassination of President Kennedy, it becomes quite clear that those are the dominant elements in this country, and that bullets, not ballots, make the ultimate decisions concerning America and realpolitik. It should be noted that President Kennedy was attempting to end the Cold War. The military didn't like that, the CIA didn't like that, the defense industries didn't like that, and so they eliminated President Kennedy. And the single most important thing that Kennedy was attempting to do was to extricate us from the Vietnam War. Well, obviously that did not happen. Kennedy was removed, and the whole tragic history of our involvement in Vietnam is now a matter of public record. Well, the ending of the Cold War represents something that is deeply threatening to the U.S. national security establishment. Gorbachev said that, quote, "We are going to do something terrible to you," meaning the United States. "We are going to deprive you of an enemy." Well, Gorbachev may have spoken too soon, because certainly the Soviet Union is not in very good shape. It would not surprise me, actually, if Gorbachev himself was America's man. There may very well be deep U.S. involvement inside of the Soviet leadership. Unfortunately, the lack of hard information about things like that makes it difficult to make an accurate assessment of just what that, just how deep our involvement is. We know that Boris Yeltsin is America's man there. That is now a matter of public record due to the good work done by Russ Ballant and Lewis Wolff and their work on the Free Congress Foundation. But it is a safe bet that as triumphant as this country would appear to be, and the Pentagon and intelligence services in particular, that the diminishing of the Soviet threat is viewed with great dismay in certain quarters, and it would not be surprising if the ongoing destabilization of the USSR, the attempts to fragment it, the reintroduction of fascist elements into the USSR and Eastern Europe, was an attempt to provoke the Soviets into restarting the Cold War so that the defense megabucks can continue to roll in. The Cold War has been the raison d'etre for the CIA and the high levels of Pentagon spending ever since the end of the Second World War. The next item that we're going to introduce into Radio Free America 36 is yet another article from this very, very important issue of Covert Action Information Bulletin. Specifically, we are now going to look once again at Covert Action Information Bulletin's issue number 35. This is their issue for the fall of 1990. And those of you who would like to obtain this very important issue can contact Covert Action Information Bulletin. Their address, once again, Covert Action Information Bulletin can be found at P.O. Box 34583, Box 34583, That's in Washington, D.C. The zip code is 20043. P.O. Box 34583, Washington, D.C., 20043. And the next article from this issue that we're going to look at is called The Loosening of Political Barriers. It's authored by Melvin Beck, last name B-E-C-K, and his bio summary is as follows. Melvin Beck spent 27 years studying the Soviets in the National Security Agency and in the CIA. He has written the book Secret Contenders, The Myth of Cold War Counterintelligence, published by the Sheridan Square Press in New York, copyrighted 1984. So former CIA and NSA analyst Melvin Beck writes of the apparent ending of the Cold War as follows. I'm only going to read part of the article. At this juncture of the loosening of political barriers between the United States and the Soviet Union, it is both premature and euphoric to proclaim that the Cold War is dead. What has, quote, died, unquote, temporarily, is the intensity of the ideological propaganda that has marked the standoff of the rival superpowers since World War II. Let it be said that the mere fact of a political thaw in the Cold War offers not the slightest reason for an intelligence organization to alter its structure or mission, or its established methods for conducting espionage, counterintelligence, or covert action. Very important sentence. I'm going to read it. Reread it, I should say. Let it be said that the mere fact of a political thaw in the Cold War offers not the slightest reason for an intelligence organization to alter its structure or mission, or its established methods for conducting espionage, counterintelligence, or covert action. Nor can it be construed that simply because nations continue to be ideological partners, for instance the United States and Israel, they would refrain from spying on one another, i.e., the Jonathan Pollard case. Skipping down in the article. Finally, given the sense of victory that engulfed the upper echelon of U.S. and Western governments as the Soviet government changed its Cold War posture, and given the urge to help satellite countries along the road to, quote, democracy and freedom, unquote, I'm glad he put quotes on that. Continuing, actually, I should reread that. Democracy and freedom does not appear to be what's going on in Eastern Europe. Fascism and anti-Semitism, it seems to me, comes a whole lot closer to it, as we looked at last week. But rereading this sentence. Finally, given the sense of victory that engulfed the upper echelon of U.S. and Western governments as the Soviet government changed its Cold War posture, and given the urge to help satellite countries along the road to democracy and freedom, it would seem that the Pentagon and the CIA would send warnings of hesitation and disbelief to the U.S. government. These two organizations have the most to lose if the Cold War fades away. Rereading that last sentence because it's very important. These two organizations have the most to lose if the Cold War fades away. The Pentagon realizes that once the communist threat, quote-unquote, diminishes, so too will public support of the Pentagon's costly race for weapon supremacy and military, nuclear, and space superiority. The CIA's analytic and intelligence processing components will continue to function at optimum levels, but its action arm for clandestine espionage, counterintelligence, and covert action will shrivel only to the degree that the rival superpowers come to share similar strategic aims on a world basis. And again, I have maintained that it is my feeling that a return to the Cold War will obviously continue to destabilize the Soviet Union by forcing continued high levels of military spending, with the resultant continued strain on the already overburdened Soviet economy. That, in turn, of course, will heighten the already massive social and political instability inside the Soviet Union. It obviously will serve as a justification for the perpetuation of high levels of military spending in this country, as well as continued CIA and other intelligence agencies' covert action functions. And it should be noted that ultimately it remains to be seen what would stem from such a policy. There are no doubt many elements in this country, and the multinational corporations in particular, that would like to see the Soviet Union converted to a free market economy and basically a laissez-faire capitalist economy along the lines of what the United States has become. It should be noted that Mikhail Gorbachev, although introducing perestroika, has long favored a mixed economy, not a free market economy like that advocated by Yeltsin and others. Bear in mind Yeltsin's connections to Free Congress Foundations and their reactionary and fascist antecedents. The Pentagon and the CIA, however, stand the most to gain from a return to the Cold War. That ultimately would serve to destabilize the Soviet Union. My guess is, again, that the dominant economic interests in the West would, like to get a hold of Soviet resources and to have a free market economy there. It remains to be seen what would stem from a return to the Cold War, but I wouldn't necessarily bet that a free market economy would be the result of such a thing. A very important article was also published in this very, very important essay was also published in this same issue of Covert Action Information Bulletin, CAIB number 35. This is an article called Balance of Terror. It's authored by a fellow who writes under the pseudonym of Boris Badinov, B-A-D-I-N-O-V, a cartoon character from the 50s and 60s. And that is a pseudonym as described here. Boris Badinov is the pseudonym of a journalist and researcher watching the developments in Eastern Europe. And what this fellow writes about in this essay called The Balance of Terror is the weakening of the Soviet intelligence system as a result of the virtual elimination of communism in Eastern Europe, and also the demoralization and apparent defection of large elements of Soviet intelligence, and how this is not likely to have a beneficial effect on the United States. And this essay is one of the main reasons why I have entitled Radio Free America 36, The Destabilization of the USSR in Eastern Europe, A Prelude to World War III, question mark, because the destabilization of the Soviet Union might ultimately lead to a nuclear war. Although I have said that there are undoubtedly elements favoring the destabilization of the Soviet Union who envision a free market economy inside the Soviet Union, it is possible that there might be a miscalculation, that what Prussian military theoretician von Clausewitz referred to as friction, i.e. things happening that were not foreseen, could take place. And a destabilizing of the Soviet Union, a compromising of their strategic and intelligence situations, could conceivably lead to a nuclear war, whether one directly planned by probably not the Soviet leadership, but perhaps elements of it. Certainly a destabilized nuclear superpower is not something which figures to add to world stability. And this essay here is one of the most important in this very important issue of Covert Action Information Bulletin. It reads as follows. During the past year, the KGB and other Eastern European intelligence agencies have been hammered by setbacks and defections. Though you'll never hear it from the CIA, the fact is the intelligence crisis in the socialist countries creates complex new dangers for both East and West. I would interject here, bear in mind the information in the Melvin Beck essay that a temporary thawing in relations is not likely to dissuade an intelligence agency from pursuing its normal course of action. There's every indication that the loosening of barriers in Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union has simply led to increased destabilization. Certainly it has not benefited the Soviet Union one bit. They may have been badly off before. They're even worse off right now. Continuing. Some measure of the present dissension inside Soviet intelligence can be seen in the controversy triggered by a rebellious, retired KGB Major General Oleg Kalugin, K-A-L-U-G-I-N. Kalugin's public activities demonstrate that the KGB is politically split and that the institution's power over the Soviet press and over its own officers has drastically declined. Kalugin asserted in recent issues of Komsomolskaya Pravda and Mezhdunarodnaya Zhin, that's spelled M-E-Z-H-D-U-N-A-R-O-D-N-A-I-Y-I-Z-H-I-Z-N, Mezhdunarodnaya Zhin, published by the official Communist Youth Organization and the party's Central Committee, respectively, that 20 senior KGB officers have defected to the West since 1980. This has led, he contended, to the transfer and sale to the West of the majority of secrets of Soviet intelligence and the complete collapse of a huge number of spy networks, unquote. Kalugin is in a position to know he was formerly a senior officer and perhaps the director of Soviet foreign counterintelligence. Kalugin went on to contend that the KGB today maintains a pervasive presence in Soviet life, tapping telephones, intimidating legislators, and infiltrating most political organizations. He claimed that other KGB officers secretly share his disdain for the agency, and he called for the Soviet equivalent of a congressional investigation of his old organization. Significantly, Kalugin has not, at this writing, been arrested or silenced and remains active on the Moscow political scene. The ex-KGB Major General has emerged as a leader of the Democratic Platform, quote-unquote, the Western-oriented reform movement in the USSR. I would interject that we've taken a look at that movement, and it remains to be seen whether it's democratically oriented. Certainly the Free Congress Foundation isn't. I am, to say the least, highly skeptical about the real, quote, reform, unquote, nature of that movement as a result of the institutions and individuals that are involved with it, notably FCF and its related elements. Continuing. Shortly after Kalugin's exposé, the KGB's present director, Vladimir Kruchkov, K-R-Y-U-C-H-K-O-V, denounced Kalugin in his Vestia, also published by the Communist Party Central Committee, rejected his criticisms, and stripped him of his pension and medals. In the process, KGB Chief Kruchkov laid out his own version of events, stressing a list of KGB counterintelligence successes against Western spies and people he described as domestic political extremists. Kruchkov was appointed by Gorbachev and appears to enjoy Gorbachev's support. The reason that this is of more than passing interest is that the stability of nuclear weapons and other armed forces in the world today is based upon a balance of forces, not the hegemony of any single power or group of powers. To avoid a nuclear war, each of the nuclear powers is driven to ensure that its own weapons are sufficiently secure against attack, that they can be used to retaliate against any enemy and can deter him from attacking in the first place. To achieve this, each country must have confidence that its intelligence system is reasonably sound and that it can use its nuclear weapons if it chooses to do so. These last several sentences, again, they are one of the most important elements in this entire series, Radio Free America 36. To avoid a nuclear war, each of the nuclear powers is driven to ensure that its own weapons are sufficiently secure against attack, that they can be used to retaliate against any enemy, and can deter him from attacking in the first place. To achieve this, each country must have confidence that its intelligence system is reasonably sound and that it can use its nuclear weapons if it chooses to do so. Even in the present period of improved East-West cooperation, if the nuclear balance of terror, quote-unquote, breaks down too rapidly, or becomes massively unstable as old tensions recede, the result could be a nuclear conflict. Disturbingly, the Soviet Union's intelligence system appears to be in serious disarray today and may be getting worse. The Soviet leadership's confidence in their nuclear weapons must almost certainly have eroded, considering that a state of near insurrection exists in parts of the Baltic states, the Ukraine, Azerbaijan, and in other areas where Soviet nuclear and military communications assets are located. There will be serious reason for concern if the USSR's ability to gather and analyze information completely disintegrates, or if the leaders of the USSR lose confidence in the security of their nuclear weapons. These last several sentences again, because they are absolutely pivotal. Even in the present period of improved East-West cooperation, if the nuclear balance of terror breaks down too rapidly or becomes massively unstable as old tensions recede, the result could be a nuclear conflict. Disturbingly, the Soviet Union's intelligence system appears to be in serious disarray today and may be getting worse. The Soviet leadership's confidence in their nuclear weapons must almost certainly have eroded, considering that a state of near insurrection exists in parts of the Baltic states, the Ukraine, Azerbaijan, and in other areas where Soviet nuclear and military communications assets are located. There will be serious reason for concern if the USSR's ability to gather and analyze information completely disintegrates, or if the leaders of the USSR lose confidence in the security of their nuclear weapons. The Kalugin incident must be viewed in terms of the broader crisis that is today severely straining Soviet society, such as the seemingly intractable economic problems and the deeply rooted rivalries among some Soviet nationalities. Add to this picture the demoralizing psychological setback of the failure of the Communist parties in the 1989 Eastern European elections and the KGB's admission of the NKVD's culpability in the Katyn massacre and in other Stalin-era repression. Meanwhile, the intelligence and covert operations networks of at least five former socialist states in Eastern Europe have disintegrated in the past year. In the German Democratic Republic, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, and Poland, the former intelligence agencies have been effectively disbanded, at least at the federal level. In some instances, many of their records have passed to new, aggressively anti-communist governments. The intelligence services of at least two of these countries, Germany and Czechoslovakia, have since the 1940s been tightly intertwined with that of the USSR and are widely believed in the West to have provided facilities for important human and electronic intelligence connection concerning Western military operations. One more time. The intelligence services of at least two of these countries, Germany and Czechoslovakia, have since the 1940s been tightly intertwined with that of the USSR and are widely believed in the West to have provided facilities for important human and electronic intelligence connection concerning Western military operations. In Yugoslavia, always a special case in East-West relations, the state and the Služba Bednosti intelligence service are still officially intact. By the way, that's S-L-U-Z-B-A, or Bezbednosti, B-E-Z-B-E-D-N-O-S-T-I. But both institutions have been so deeply split by political, ethnic, and religious rivalries that the central government frequently seems to have broken down, and the country may be headed for a division into two or three new states. These factors strongly suggest that significant setbacks in Soviet intelligence capabilities have taken place in the last year, perhaps the most serious erosion of such facilities since the Nazi invasion of the USSR in 1941. In Eastern Europe, there is a clear crisis of morale among veterans of the old governments. It is reasonable to suspect that this has to a certain degree filtered into the USSR as well. Historically, setbacks and demoralization of this type have often led to a jump in the number of defections, and that seems to have been the case in 1989 and 1990. Indirect evidence for this can be seen in the fact that for the first time in recent memory, CIA spokesmen are beating the drums for an increase in, quote, human intelligence, unquote, budgets, which are used primarily for maintenance of new agents in place and for the care and feeding of defectors. U.S. national security circles have, for the most part, warmly welcomed the unfolding crisis in Eastern Europe on the theory that any trouble for the Soviets is a boon for the U.S. The fact is, however, that the U.S. has an interest in the stability of the USSR and even of the KGB. If Soviet intelligence capabilities continue to break down, the result will be almost certainly greater... If Soviet intelligence capabilities continue to break down, the result will almost certainly be greater instability in Soviet behavior during the next global crisis, regardless of how that conflict comes to pass, and that means increased danger and still more perilous U.S. behavior as well. And well, that last sentence, in a way, could be said to be the thesis statement of this entire broadcast. That is to say, the last 6 weeks combined into RFA 36. If Soviet intelligence capabilities continue to break down, the result will almost certainly be greater instability in Soviet behavior during the next global crisis, regardless of how that conflict comes to pass, and that means increased danger and still more perilous U.S. behavior as well. And I think it's worth noting here that this journalist operating under that pseudonym notes that the recent events in the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe represent the most serious compromising of Soviet intelligence since the Nazi invasion of the Soviet Union in 1941. One of the main points that I have made in this broadcast and that I stated a short time ago is that basically what we are seeing in the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, at least to a certain extent, is an actualization of Hitler's program in that part of the world. Hitler broke up Yugoslavia into its component republics. There was pressure to do that again with obvious interference from old Ustashi and ABN-related elements. He broke up Czechoslovakia. We're seeing the Slovak World Congress and residual Linke elements once again coming to the fore in Czechoslovakia and advocating for the secession of Slovakia from Czechoslovakia. The ABN formed an alliance with Hitler in 1943. Once again, its agenda has been to break up the Soviet Union. Obviously, that agenda may very well take... Well, if the KGB and Soviet military do not intervene, it probably is going to take place. It remains to be seen exactly what the future holds, but, again, I am personally fearful of what the future holds. A nuclear war obviously isn't going to benefit anybody, and one wonders whether there are elements in this country, though, that would like to see a third world war. Certainly there are elements that would like to see a return to the Cold War, because it means serious megabucks for them, as well as continued employment for the U.S. intelligence apparatus, which would have to combat the Soviet menace, quote-unquote, once again. I wonder what secret weaponry we have that we have not been told about. There is a huge Pentagon black budget, quote-unquote, as it has been termed. And I wonder what sort of toys we have that the public has not been told about. Perhaps there are weapons in existence that would embolden the United States to perhaps even think it could fight a third world war. It remains to be seen. I think, in particular, the compromising of Soviet nuclear weapons is something to be on the alert for. It remains to be seen whether some of the dissident nationalists can get their hands on those devices, but that's not a very appetizing prospect if it happens. I'd like to read an article that appeared in the San Francisco Sunday Examiner and Chronicle. Today is Sunday, April 7th of 1991. It is in today's paper, in today's edition of the San Francisco Sunday Examiner and Chron. This is a London Independent story, Dateline Washington. It's headlined, U.S. Concerned on Soviet Arms. The United States, fearing a possible breakdown of Kremlin rule, is considering lending the Soviet Union advanced safety devices that would prevent nationalist or terrorist groups from using captured nuclear weapons. Experts say that the Soviet Union has removed almost all nuclear weapons from two areas where central rule is weak, the three Baltic states and the volatile Caucasian republics of Armenia, Azerbaijan, and Georgia. But others remain in unstable areas. The tricky question is the Ukraine and Kazakhstan, says Sven Kramer, a U.S. analyst and presidential advisor. There are thought to be thousands of nuclear weapons in these two republics, both of which are internally divided and edging away from Soviet rule. Well, it remains to be seen whether or not these devices are in fact provided to the USSR. I noted here that Sven Kramer is the person who commented on this. Sven Kramer is the son of Fritz Kramer. Sven Kramer is a key National Security Council, or was for many years a key National Security Council member. His father, Fritz Kramer, was for many years the plans officer for the United States Army from 1949 through 1970. He also was a fellow who boosted Henry Kissinger into prominence. Fritz Kramer was a key official with the 970th Counterintelligence Corps during and after World War II. That was one of the units most responsible for recruiting Nazi war criminals into the Galen Organization and the CIA, notably Klaus Barbie and Otto Skorzeny, among others. And the late May Brussel has developed very compelling information that, in fact, Fritz Kramer is the same Fritz Kramer who served as chief of staff of the 6th SS Panzer Army in Germany during World War II. Although that Fritz Kramer supposedly died in 1959, May has obtained very compelling photographic evidence that, in fact, Fritz Kramer is the same Fritz Kramer that served Hitler so loyally. And obviously this is an individual who has retained a presence in the United States. Interesting to see Sven Kramer, the person who's commenting on this particular situation. But I think the fact that the United States is even considering providing these devices is indicative of the degree of instability in the Soviet Union. It is to be hoped that elements within our national security establishment would conclude that destabilizing the Soviet Union is likely to prove dangerous, as that article, The Balance of Terror, would indicate. It remains to be seen, however, exactly what comes of this. The final element in this ongoing of this series in Radio Free America 36, developed over the last 6 weeks, is also in an article in today's San Francisco Sunday Examiner and Chronicle, and today once again being Sunday, April 7th of 1991, for the benefit of people who hear this by tape. This is an article that is a Reuters story. It's Dateline Washington and headlined, Nixon Discounts Soviet Union as a Superpower, and it reads as follows. The Soviet Union, once branded an evil empire, quote-unquote, by former President Ronald Reagan, is fast becoming an irrelevant empire, quote-unquote, largely because of its economic weakness, says ex-President Richard Nixon. Nixon, the only president to resign from office, has just ended a two-week visit to the Soviet Union that included talks with Soviet President Mikhail Gorbachev and visits to three separatist republics, Lithuania, the Ukraine, and Georgia. Quote, in today's world, an empire that has only military power and is a third-world economic power, falling hopelessly behind, will eventually become irrelevant, unquote, Nixon said in the April 15th issue of U.S. News and World Report. Nixon said the Soviet economic crisis is so severe, it is diminishing the importance of a strategic arms agreement with Moscow. One more time. Nixon said the Soviet economic crisis is so severe, it is diminishing the importance of a strategic arms agreement with Moscow. Quote, in view of the enormous economic problems the Soviet Union has, they are not going to be able to afford the expenditures necessary for military modernization. Well, it remains to be seen just how the Soviet military responds to that, but perhaps they will simply give up the ghost, roll over, and die, but I wouldn't necessarily bet on that, and the Soviet high command has already expressed great reservations about falling behind the United States militarily, or further falling behind the United States militarily. The Soviet Union has always, popular Cold War mythology to the contrary notwithstanding, that Cold War mythology largely generated by the Galen Organization. The United States has always been well ahead of the Soviet Union in armaments. The Soviet arms effort in the post-World War II period has essentially been to stay within hailing distance of the United States, so that they could not contemplate an actual attack. One wonders exactly what the effect of the disparity in the U.S. and Soviet military power will be, but it is not, as the Balance of Terror article by, quote, Boris Badenov indicates, a situation which is likely to benefit either country. It's also worth noting, again, the success of the full-court press described in the Sean Gervaisi article. In that article, the full-court press, in the covert action information bulletin number 35. And again, I don't pretend to have all of the answers in this situation. I don't know how it's going to resolve itself, but what I have attempted to do in this program is to lay out what I think is going on, what has gone on, and what may go on. Once again, obviously, a lion's share of the credit goes to the various people at Covert Action Information Bulletin and the people who have contributed to this critical issue of CAIB. I will give the address once again. Covert Action Information Bulletin, P.O. Box 34583, Washington, D.C., 20043. For those of you who would like to actually order Covert Action Information Bulletin 35, there is at least one more article in this particular issue that I will be doing in a future archive series called How the United States Lost the Second World War. And that is one that we will come to in the future. But I have attempted to supplement their work with my own analysis, and in particular the role that the Gulf War has played in this, and I've already indicated that I feel that that is an essential element not only of the full-court press, but of the ongoing destabilization of the USSR. Obviously, the people at CAIB were not able to include this, and I've also obviously included information such as the information about the Prometheus League, background of OUN, ABN, etc., that they were not able to get to. And that is the formal conclusion of Radio Free America 36, the six-part installment, done in six installments, The Destabilization of the USSR in Eastern Europe, a prelude to World War III. And the Boris Badenov article, I think, indicates why I have put a question mark at the end of that. I don't know whether or not that's going to happen, but I think there are ominous possibilities on the horizon. And in particular, the fact that there are elements in our country that would like nothing better than to see a return of the Cold War is one of the things that I think bodes very poorly for the future.